If you found your passion for meteorology or storm chasing through severe weather-focused movies or shows, you will love this episode of Weather Geeks. Our guest on today's podcast is Jamie Winterstern, who wrote and directed the movie Supercell that was recently released in mid-March to kick off the severe weather season. Jamie is the youngest to ever direct and produce an NBC primetime drama show. It was called Siberia. It was about the survival in the frigid wilderness, so he knows a thing or two about creating suspense in the elements. Will Supercell become the new Twister, or will it create its own path within the weather movie genre? Let's hear from the man himself. Welcome, Jamie, to the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Are you a weather geek or a nature geek? I mean, clearly we'll get into some of your background in general, but I usually start this podcast off asking how'd you become a weather geek? So are you a weather geek?
I'm totally a weather geek. I'm from Montreal, Canada. I grew up in Montreal and it's cold up there during the winters. A lot of Montrealers are considered snowbirds, so they would fly down to Florida. My family had a small condo over the course of, I don't know how many years. I mean, we always had a place in Florida since I was born. So I would spend March break in Florida. And sometimes we would spend summertime vacations in Florida. And if you know Florida, it is the lightning capital of the world.
Correct.
So my fondest memories are being at the ocean at night, watching lightning. And it was always, over the ocean. So you could enjoy it. It wasn't raining. It was immaculate light shows. And I would always have a camcorder. I mean, my mother, she was filming my family. She was the original filmmaker. And I remember stealing her camcorder during, storm evenings, and I would film it and I would come home. This was back when there were VHS tapes, and I would take the lightning and I would tape edit it so that I would have this reel of just lightning strikes, and I would call it March Thunderstorms 1997. And back in Montreal during the winter time, I would watch my lightning strikes on VHS.
Oh, wow.
Tape. So I've been fascinated.
Oh, you're a bona fide weather geek for sure. Welcome to the fold. Anyone that's making clips of lightning, and yeah, what you're probably were looking at, just to geek out for a second, was these sort of land breeze storms. In the daytime, the storms are actually over the land mass, but that circulation reverses. At night, those storms are out over the ocean, and they can be very brilliant lightning producers. So I've certainly experienced that as well. I went to school at Florida State University, so very much familiar with weather in Florida as well. That's really fascinating. Let me give the listeners and viewers a bit of background on Jamie. He's the director of Supercell, which you heard me mention. He has a master's in fine arts and a BA from the USC Film School. In 2015, he created Swipe Market, a creative agency focused on bringing entertainment to Silicon Valley. He has directed and produced over 200 campaigns for brands including HP Enterprise and Intel. So clearly someone that knows what he's doing in that space. Are you a chaser as well? Have you chased storms? I mean, we're going to get to Supercell, but I'm trying to get to the point of why you made Supercell. So have you done any chasing?
It's funny. I have this production company. We do a lot of marketing and branding. I did Siberia when I was 28. And I've always wanted to make movies my whole life since I was a kid. I was fascinated. I was obsessed with Steven Spielberg, Ron Howard, Robert Zemeckis. And, Siberia comes out, it's television for NBC. And I felt like I didn't take advantage. I was a little young and dumb. And I thought because I did something, impressive, that things would just happen for me. But that's not how life works. You have to keep working. And this window kind of closed, and I just pivoted to advertising, but it didn't fill my need. And I always wanted to make a movie, but I need a story to tell. Now, around 2019, my mother was really sick with Alzheimer's. And I was in a very low point in my life. I wasn't very happy. I wasn't fulfilled. And my fiance and I, this had nothing to do with making a movie. I just decided to go storm chasing because I've always wanted to do it. I would go to Florida And I even went to Arizona because it's close to California for monsoon season, because I learned how to do pretty great long exposures of lightning. So I decided to finally go storm chasing in the Midwest. And I just picked a random severe event happening in West Texas. And in 2019, I didn't know anything about storm chasing. So I called the first storm chasing tour company that came up on my Google browser, and it was Tempest Tours. Now, I didn't want to spend the money that they charged, and I couldn't afford to go for a 10-day trip. I just wanted to go for 3-4 days. So I spoke to Kim George, who's the director there under Martin Lysias, and she was a sweetheart. She said, fly into Arlington, talk to my husband, who's a geologist. His name is Steve George. I did exactly that. We ended up in his office in Arlington, and he gave us a 2-hour crash course on what the HER was, what the NAM nest was. He told us all the science of how supercells work. He told us the 3 rules to abide by so we wouldn't get into any trouble, which is in the film. And sure enough, he said, we looked at this little HER model, and there was a little red dot over Ozona, Texas. He said, at 3 p.m., be here. And to me, I was like, how could forecasting get this specific that these models could pick up exactly where these storms are going to develop? And sure enough, the next day, she was my girlfriend, now she's my fiance. We drove to, you know, that area, San Angelo, then Ozona, and it was exactly how it was on the model. There was this amazing atomic bomb through the cap rock that was just sitting there, and it was my first supercell, and I was hooked. And from that moment on, I just discovered the community of storm chasing. I saw all the same people that were on the side of the road. They ended up at the diner at the end of the night, and they would share. And it was this really cozy collegiate feeling. You could be 40, you could be 70, but you felt like you were in college. And I love that. And I think after that trip, I said, you know what, this is the story I want to tell.
Oh, wow. This is really fascinating. I'm talking with Jamie Winterstern. And yeah, you know, you mentioned the models. For those that are listening or watching, he mentioned the HER model, which is a high resolution model. I think for someone that really is outside of our field, the fidelity and accuracy of these models is amazing in terms of they can produce simulated radar now that looks exactly like what it happens to be hours to a day or so later. And so we're looking for things like the CAPE, the instability, the shear. What are the initiation mechanisms? I teach a mesoscale radar meteorology course here at the University of Georgia, and just spent an entire semester talking about these things that we look for to identify sort of the fingerprints of severe weather. So that clearly you have a chaser, some chaser experience. My producers pointed out that in the movie, the words gorilla hail are mentioned. And so that gives me a clue that some of the people perhaps that you've talked to or been around or at least watched or been exposed to. So are there any sort of key chasers that you've come to really admire or interact with over the years?
It's funny. And the person you're mentioning is Reed Timmer. I wasn't in contact with Reed prior to the making of the movie. I came into contact with Reed after the film, and we could talk about this later. But I just went on a chase in the Dom 3 with Reed this past weekend. I had the experience of my life, but I don't want to digress on that right now. So yes, chasers were the lifeblood of this whole thing. I couldn't have made this film without the chasing community. It started with Tempest Tours. You know, Kim and Steve led me to meeting Martin, who owns and operates that company. Martin is a fantastic storm chasing filmmaker who actually consulted on Twister, the original Twister. And he has a long pedigree and history in storm chasing. Through him, I met with Bill Reed. You know, the TESA conference, which is held every 2 years, I attended that. I met Roger Edwards at the Forecasting Center. I would meet all of these meteorologists. Eventually, I met Skip Talbot, who led me to Pecos Hank, who became, I think, my closest collaborator, because I was able to use his entire library of footage to make the VFX, to make the skies look as real as they did. So the chasers were my colleagues in this, and I couldn't have done it without them. David Hoadley pretty much donated all of his illustrations from the original storm track to put as production design in the movie. So you'll see a lot of David Hoadley. Yeah, it was incredible working with the community.
Yeah, we're going to geek out a little bit more because there's real science in this movie, and some of the things that were utilized were fascinating to me. So when we come back from the break, I want to dig in more and, as we say in the podcast, geek out.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for an additional 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Jamie Winterstern, director of Supercell. Now, let's just geek out here, because in the movie, it's great to see Roy and William use the Storm Prediction Center with the College of DuPage and analyzing storms. Clearly, you did your research. Actors use terminology like enhanced risk to describe the threat for severe weather. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, again, you talked about your experiences kind of leading up to this point, but immerse the listeners and viewers of Weather Geeks into the process of making Supercell.
Well, you know, the thing is, there's a balance to it, right? I always wanted to make this film so that that percentage of storm chasers could watch it and feel like this was them. This was a good representation of them. And that was, you know, that led into all the tools that were used, the terminology, the lingo. But at the end of the day, it's a movie for the masses. It's a family adventure. So really the heart of the story, and this may have disappointed some that were expecting the Roland Emmerich big budget blockbuster, like nonstop weather action, but this is really a family movie. It's a family drama at its core. And I, you know, for me, the inspiration was those films that we watched in the 80s and 90s, you know, movies like Jurassic Park that were centered around family and, you know, the dinosaurs or the skies were almost a backdrop to what's really important, because this movie is really about my parents, and it's about our relationship to our parents and dealing with grief and dealing with loss and not taking our parents for granted. So that was always at the center, always. And, you know, the weather, when it did present itself, I did my best with the lack of budget we did have, because people have to remember that Supercell is an independent movie. It's not a blockbuster. It's not a studio movie. I know Twisters is being made right now, and they have, from what I hear, $200 million to make their film. Just to put it into perspective, we had about $3 to $5 million. So, you know, that's not a lot of money. A lot of indie dramas that center around people in a house are made for that amount of money, let alone tornadoes and special effects and everything we did. So it was a very thin budget. So I just had to, you know, I had to kind of tease the audience, and I hope I did my job in terms of creating suspense, because, you know, for me, the excitement was, you know, the characters and how they interacted and all the lead up to these events, which is what Zane says. It's 90% driving and 10% witnessing the creator's wrath, because that's what storm chasing is. And some of my fondest memories, especially on this last trip with Reed Timmer, was all the fun stuff that we talked about hours in his Dominator until that, you know, those few hours of it's on, and then you get the action. But it was a balancing act, and, you know, I was very lucky to, I wanted to get all the collaborators right, so I reached out to Paul Cervaca and Ronald Stentz at the College of DuPage. I actually ran into Paul on this last chase for the first time we met in person, and he showed the movie to his entire class, which was awesome, because obviously their modeling systems and everything that we use is in the film. Radarscope gave us their license to use Radarscope in the movie, which is fantastic. Kelly Pirtle of the National Weather Service
and National Severe Storms Lab. Yep.
Yes, sorry. She was able to get us clearance to use the logo, so you'll see the National Weather Service logo on the damage surveyor jackets. I just wanted this to be real. You know, if you're making a movie about the NFL, you want to use the NFL sure. logos, right? You want to use real teams. So for me, it was trying to ground this and make this feel as real as possible.
So looking through some of the, you know, terminology there and so forth, and the bear's cage and the cap and the convergent zones and so forth. Yeah, it's clear that you took to heart that sort of 2-hour crash course that you heard. But I'm curious, as you've been out there with Reed and with others, and by the way, a couple of the folks at College of DuPage, shout out to Dr. Victor Gensini and Dr. Walker Ashley. Those are two alumni of our program here at the University of Georgia and our faculty there. But as you've been out there in these environments, what do you recall or that struck you the most about being in these chase environments in real time?
I will say that being with Reed Timmer was a wake-up call because, you know, and I say this with all the utmost respect for Reed, because all I knew from Reed was what I saw on television, the Discovery Channel Storm Chasers series, right? You know, he's an animated guy who gets really close to the edge. He wants to intercept these things, you know, and I didn't know what to expect. And I met the man, and he is one of the most genuine, kind souls I've met. He is just sincerely a guy who loves what he does. And he is so knowledgeable. It's funny. And then it's funny because the first two chase days were in Texas, and they weren't great chase days. I think they were slight risk days. And, you know, I was just learning more about this man. And we were in the Dominator Dom 3, which is like famously known for all those seasons. And this is the first time he's using it in 5-6 years. So it's exciting. And every time he goes to a gas station, there's crowds that come up because this vehicle is it's so much eye candy. It's hard for him to get out of the gas station to continue the chase because he just wants to please everybody. He wants to take a photo with everybody. And I love that about him. But it wasn't until day 3. And if you recall, there was this really big storm in Linnaeus, Missouri. And I think it was a 5% chance in that area. And we had chased all day, and these storms, you know, they were doing these like little ground brushes. There were a couple of like maybe small F0s that were popping up. And then I was watching, you know, Reed interact with Jordan Hall, which is another chaser who was sitting shotgun. And I saw a different zone turn on. And it was as if watching like two quarterbacks working. And I was just witnessing kind of the nonstop, you know, figuring out the routing to get yourself in these constant position for hours while they're doing a live stream, while they're capturing footage. And then the night started to fall, and we noticed that the electricity was really getting rampant, which is like, I guess that's showing that this thing is about to produce. And we saw this big knob, which I learned was the tornado cyclone, that was just so stout. And we're driving toward Linnaeus, and night falls, and Reed's like, feel the wind. It just feel the air. It's turning hot. It's like becoming this crispy hot air. And it was surreal. The engine was revving, and we would just drive and we would stop. And then you would see, once we got to a clearing, this entire like circulation coming down to the ground. And I was shooting on my Sony, and I felt like, this was the most surreal experience. The way I can best describe it, I felt like I was present with God. But what I wanted to say about Reed is that I never felt in danger. We could have been a couple football fields away from this thing that could have easily thrown this Dom. Maybe it didn't. Maybe the Dom could handle the wind speeds, but I felt safe because I was with this guy that he felt like a tier above everyone else. And the way I like to describe Reed is, you know, if Kasparov sees the chessboard, right, or if Steven Spielberg sees through the movie camera, Reed Timmer sees the sky. Nobody can do it like him. And he, it's just, he can, like, he just knows where to put himself. It's really an unbelievable thing to witness. So I was just beside myself. I'm still having trouble describing the words.
I can see the, yeah. But it's interesting, and I did want to bring this up because, yeah, Reed's certainly one of the more experienced folks out there in chase world, and he's, you know, he studied the field. A lot of people don't know this about Reed Timmer, but he's studied at the University of Oklahoma, one of the top programs. So he knows the stuff.
He has his doctorate.
I didn't know if he had, I knew that he was working towards it, and I did. I just haven't. Yeah. I've lost track of where he was in the process, but I guess he did complete it. But, but having said that, there are some people that are critical of chasers or the danger, and you know, at times I think some of that criticism is warranted because there's chaser convergence and lots of things going on. But I also know that there's value in going out there and seeing nature. And also being involved in this process. So just give us your perspective as someone that has kind of come into this, because there has been significant debate on both sides of the ledgers about chasing. So what would you add to that narrative?
This is the theme of the film, right? It's do you chase for knowledge or do you chase for thrill? As people, human nature, I don't know if you can distinguish between the two, because we're human beings. Yeah. It's emotion. It's feeling. And I can tell you from being in the presence of that Linnaeus tornado, it's a drug. I mean, I'm addicted to that feeling. I want to go back.
I can tell.
And I spoke to Pecos Hank after the chase, and he is also, you know, a brilliant artist. I call him an artist. Whereas as Reed is a scientist to me, Pecos is a true artist. There's a renaissance to how he chases, right? Because he makes these really remarkable YouTube films. You know, for him, the windshield is his sacred space. And I loved how he worded that. He likes to go alone. He doesn't stream. He doesn't put himself on the spotter network. But to go back to answer your question, it's a difficult subject matter because there's an inherent danger to doing this. And yes, you have convergence. You're going to have people that may or may not know what they're doing. You know, it's a very touchy subject, and it's something that I actually want to explore with a future endeavor. I'm working on a docuseries about storm chasing, but I will say it's not something that is black and white. It's very gray, and I don't think you can really say it's inherently bad or it's inherently good. I think there's good and bad that comes with this, and it should be further investigated, because I think there is amazing discoveries that are pushing severe science forward because of these people that put themselves out there, that spend months away from their families, that live unhealthy lifestyles, eating terrible food, And having short sleeping hours. It's not a glamorous lifestyle, I can tell you that much. So I want to give credit where credit's due, but I do understand how it can be seen as risk-taking, almost daredevil-like. But I think when you do have an understanding like Reed does, like you had an understanding like Tim Samaras did, I think there's a tremendous value of what I guess I would call these people heroes, because they're in a way the cowboys of the John Wayne past, but they're pioneers because they are pushing something forward. And I think there's respect that needs to be given, even though it is a controversial subject matter. I don't know if that answers your question.
I wanted your take as someone, because again, the perspectives are very much all over the place. And I think you captured the nuance of it very well. But when we come back, I want to kind of circle back to the film and movie one last time after the break.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Jamie Winterstern on his film Supercell, but a lot more, getting his insights on storm chasing and mesoscale meteorology, storm dynamics, all the things that we as meteorologists talk about. So he's a bona fide weather geek, and so we welcome you to the fold. You mentioned your budget. It's certainly not like some of the big blockbuster budgets. You're wearing a Jurassic Park shirt as we are recording this with big budget film. I mean, how'd you go about doing your special effects and doing scenes? I mean, given those budget requirements, does it take a little bit more creativity?
Oh, yeah. In a way, it's a lot more difficult, but it does create a sandbox, a really tight with parameter sandbox, which forces you to make decisions, which is always the most important part. Being a director, you know, what I learned, this is my first movie, and it was a huge learning curve. I had a lot of sleepless nights, and it probably wasn't until midway through production that I finally gained my bearings and started feeling that confidence to know that I had what it took to make a movie. But, yeah, you're given these problems every day that you have to solve. And, you know, truly when you have these parameters, it becomes pretty clear to you. The one thing that I would say is less is more. Whatever the audience doesn't see will always be far more than whatever you could provide them. And that's an old Hitchcockian trait. You want to go back to Hitchcock. That's the master of suspense right there. I mean, Spielberg borrowed a lot from Hitchcock, as you know. You could say Jaws was kind of this reintegration of what Birds was. So for me, it was really finding the details, because you could, with a small budget, you could focus on very small frames. One big thing was keeping the camera subjective and always inside or around the vehicle. Because you can control the environment around a vehicle with special effects. We had these Ritter fans that blew about 50, 60 mile per hour winds that would throw dust. We'd have rain machines that would be sitting above the van. So you could create chaos in a very controlled environment. Now, when we went big, there was no way we could produce what you would be able to produce at a large scale. We didn't also want to do CGI, because it's my belief that CGI at a large scale is very numbing. You know, CGI was introduced pretty much in the 90s with ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, and it was really computer imagery was introduced with Jurassic Park, because originally they were supposed to do stop motion dinosaurs, but they realized that they could create VFX dinosaurs in wide shots that looked pretty realistic. And what happened was, I feel like CGI has been abused, where it's been pretty much, we're going to do everything in CGI. You watch a lot of Marvel films, you watch Transformers or the big 2012 and the Day After Tomorrow. And it's almost, you don't feel anything because it's not grounded in reality. So for me, I always wanted...
By the way, that's been my sense just as a casual viewer.
It's my perspective, and I feel like I don't want to dishearten or cause any... you know, Marvel's is a great experience in its own right. I think, you know, there's a reason why it's so successful. I'm not trying to bash those movies, but in terms of, yeah, but to create a real grounded experience, you want the VFX to support the tangible, you know, what you could do in front of the camera. So for me, it was knowing that I had a palette, I had a canvas that was the sky. Now, when we shot, it was always blue skies. We were in the big sky state, Montana, when we shot our exteriors. And it was something that could be replaced in post. But I needed footage to replace that. And who else better to go to than Pecos Hank, who's been shooting the most beautiful skyscapes for, 20 years? And we befriended each other. He knew we didn't have a budget. He is an artist himself. He basically donated. I mean, we paid him a little sum of money, but he basically donated most of his, like the footage, whatever fit the scene work. So there was this marriage between his footage and the foreground plates with a lot of practical effects in between for us to marry the two, you know, fore and back. And there's a pretty cool video we made that's on his channel called Making of Supercell, which was just released 2 days ago. So you can kind of see how we work together. But it was, you know, that kind of was the secret sauce to making the movie.
Really amazing. One curious question. Were any of your cast members, the actors in the film, were they weather enthusiasts or weather geeks, or did they become them afterwards?
I would say they hopefully became weather geeks. I don't know if any of them were big on weather prior the film. I will say, you know, Skeet Ulrich, who you guys remember from Scream, he mentioned in the interview that it was not hard to act because we had the big fans on him. So we created the storm environment where, you know, he had to perform with 50 mile per hour gusts with debris flying and rain falling because it wasn't 100% VFX. So I think they got the kind of a little bit of that feeling like you would get in the field with those big northerlies or westerlies or whatever direction the wind comes from. But I hope that, you know, going through the experience that when something pops up weather related, it piques their interest. I know that Alec Baldwin said also in an interview that he studied both Tim Samaras and Reed Timmer. He called them the two Tims for his role of Zane.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, and I did hear you say that you're working on some other things. So there are more weather-related things coming from you, I assume.
Yeah, I can't escape it. I really thought I would do Supercell and then move on with my life and try and focus on the next thing. But there's a couple of things that I've got going on. One is a seashell documentary that I started filming last summer about Sanibel. Sanibel famously is known as the Mecca for seashells with the way the ocean topography works in the Gulf of Mexico. And I don't know if you want to call it karma or what, storms keep chasing me, because a month after we started interviewing these people, Hurricane Ian made landfall and decimated the island. So we went back to track the stories of all these people that were affected and the island, you know, how they're rebuilding and surviving, you know, now it's, you know, 8 to 10 months later. So we have that going on. But then after spending all this time with all these amazing, you know, influential chasers, I'm starting to get the itch to now tell, I guess, a more human story that could be presented in a docuseries about storm chasing. I think it would be very fascinating to get not just that 10% of chasing, which is the adrenaline rush, but that 90% of what it takes of these people that have to leave their children, that spend thousands of miles in their vehicles, that survive off gas station food and roach motels. There's something there that I'm pursuing. So there's a lot of weather stuff that I just can't seem to kick
yeah,
right
sure.
now.
Yeah, sure. No, it's addictive. All of us that got into this field, it just sucks you in because there is a passion and interest there. So I definitely resonate from a different lens. And perhaps we'll see you at some of our big conferences. The American Meteorological Society AMS conference, main conference, is in January up in Baltimore. It'd be awesome to have a filming or a Supercell or a screening of it. So hopefully the AMS folks will touch base if they hear this or watch this podcast. We've got to end it there. But where can people – well, first of all, where can people see Supercell?
So basically, Supercell right now is available for purchase online. You can go to iTunes, Amazon, Redbox. Supercellmovie.com has information. Also, if you want that Brody Storm Tour swag, you want the Brody Storm Tour's hat or shirts, it's available for purchase at supercellmovie.com. You can also go to your local Target or Best Buy. This is also available for purchase online. It's a pretty cool DVD. It includes bonus features, which is the making of Supercell, as well as commentary and the proof of concept that I did leading up to the film, which includes a lot of chase footage. And if you enjoy the film, please go on Rotten Tomatoes and give it a good rating and a good review. Every review counts. And I hope you guys enjoy the film. It was made with a lot of love.
Are you on social media anywhere that people can follow you?
Yeah. So I know weather's a big Twitter thing.
WX Twitter is a big follow.
Yes, I got to get the Twitter thing going, but I live predominantly on Instagram. Supercell the movie is the handle for Instagram at Supercell the movie, and then me personally, it's HJW Films, which is my screen name and the name I was given to birth, Herbert James Winterstern, even though I go by Jamie. So those are the two places you can get updates on everything going on.
Very good.
Film-wise.
Well, this has been amazing. I'm really honored that you took the time to join us. I have not seen Supercell, but I will see it shortly because we just finished our semester here, so I actually have time to catch up on some movies. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you, Marshall.
And it's Dr. Marshall Shepherd from the University of Georgia. Thank you all for joining us. I'm headed to watch Supercell. See ya. We'll be right back.